If you like what you're hearing, why not try a StephCast subscription? Only $4.95 a month if you buy a year in advance. Go to StephanieMiller.com to find out how.
It is the Stephanie Miller Show. Welcome to it. All right, let's give him the welcome he's accustomed to as a rock star of the resistance. Representative Adam Schiff of the great state of California. Good morning, Congressman.
Good morning. How are you?
I know how popular you are because it's much, much harder to book you now. I call and I call and I call. I'm like Adele calling you a million times. God bless you, sir, for the work you're doing. I can't believe it's only 100 days. This has been so terrifying and exhausting, this entire...
You know, it is amazing. I think this has been the longest 100 days of anybody's life. And I was a much younger man 100 days ago.
Yes. Someone tweeted, I liked it. I like my old life better, too. I agree with Trump. I liked it better before he was president.
Yeah.
Congressman, we have so much to get updated on. First of all, you tweeted, Congress must debate and vote on matters of war, introduced a new bill reasserting Congress's role as a check and balance on POTUS war-making power. I mean, I think it is just terrifying, not only the military misadventures that he's undertaken already, but the fact that he just so casually talks about that, oh yeah, sure, there could be absolutely a possibility of war with North Korea.
You know, it is, I think, very terrifying and disturbing. And, you know, some people want to give him the benefit of the doubt and say this is his negotiating style. Well, that's fine until it provokes a confrontation, and then it doesn't look like such a great negotiating style.
Yeah.
We certainly ought to be doing everything we can to get China to crack down on North Korea's program and tighten the economic noose around North Korea. But these statements and the cavalier way he talks about a major, major conflict, that would be absolutely devastating to the region, and who knows where that would lead. So that's not something I think you want to talk about in a cavalier fashion.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, it seems on each and every issue, Congressman, he doesn't seem to understand either the Constitution or the way government works. Right? Like he said yesterday, like, oh, yeah, that's happening today, the renegotiating NAFTA. It's like that's not how it works, right? He has to notify Congress. There is a period of consultation. I mean, I think it's just this whole latest terrifying interview, just that he didn't know this would be so hard. I mean, the whole thing makes you feel like someone is flying the plane that is not a pilot, right? That doesn't know what he's doing.
Well, it's true. I mean, this is the price that we pay for electing as president someone who has no experience in governing. And who campaigned that I'm really good at this, just trust me. You're going to be so tired of winning, you're going to say, Donald, please don't make me win so much.
Right.
And, you know, sadly, that was a successful campaign strategy, but now he is the president of the United States. And, you know, he does appear to have believed that this was much easier, that every predecessor in office must have been some kind of a knucklehead because it's so simple to do health care, it's so simple to fix the problem with North Korea, it's so simple to deal with Iran, it's so simple to deal with all of our problems, but now, of course, he's finding out, no, it's actually very, very difficult and requires a lot of effort.
And by the way, big props to all you in the House. I was saying this is the real Democratic Unity Tour, is that you guys really stuck together. And so, you know, obviously the president is so desperate to have a win of any kind because it's all about his ego, you know, was trying to rush through this disastrous Trump-care thing again. And now they have to delay it, right, because the Democrats stood together and said no.
Well, and absolutely. But not only that, so many of your listeners and others around the country took to the streets, took to the town halls, joined marches, and sent a message to Congress that we're not going to stand idly by while you take away health care from, you know, 24 million people. And I think that message really resonated. They run everything here. They could do this if they could put up their own votes, but people around the country made it clear that they'll hold them accountable if they disenfranchise people from their health care. There won't be any blaming it on the Democrats. They're running everything. And I think those protests really had an impact.
Well, yeah, and obviously leaders like you tweeted, it'll make you sick. The GOP's new bill lets states waive protections for those with pre-existing conditions but exempts members of Congress. And, you know, because they got caught, they had to back down on that too. Right.
Well, you know what is so ironic about that, and you just can't make this stuff up. When we passed the Affordable Care Act, we put members of Congress in it. I buy my health insurance on the D.C. exchange. I would prefer to buy it on the California exchange, but it's where your employer is. But nonetheless, you know, on the right, they pushed out this narrative at odds with all the facts that Congress kept itself out of the Affordable Care Act because it was a good punchline, even though it was patently untrue. But flash forward, the Republicans come up with their health care bill, and they do exempt Congress. It's just, you can't make this stuff up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then we go to the tax plan. You said POTUS's tax plan is huge, huge tax cuts for corporations and the wealthy, huge deficit for the country, huge disappointment all around. And I don't know if you saw the story. I was saying that because he's so vindictive, he found a way in there that it will hit blue states harder, right?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. And when you couple the tax bill with the health care bill, it's a disaster for the whole country, but particularly for states like California, because what it will do is, on the healthcare front, it will mean, you know, all those people that are getting healthcare through Medicaid are likely to lose their access to healthcare. People in exchanges with pre-existing conditions going to lose their access to healthcare. And then the Republicans say, well, but we'll give the states the opportunity to do this stuff that we're cutting. But then they're going to cut the money for the states by making sure that you can't deduct your state taxes anymore. So
yeah.
It's a recipe for disaster.
In the latest, Trump is gaslighting all of us. You saw he tweeted, Democrats are going to shut down the government and the national parks just when people are trying to go on vacation, sad. but as we know, he's the one, as you tweeted, you said a monumentally bad idea. Trump's planned EO would reconsider designations of wilderness areas and eliminate protection of pristine lands. His strategy continues to be, I know you are, but what am I? Right, he's accusing others of doing what he actually just did.
You would think that he was a Republican president having to deal with a Democratic Congress. They control everything.
Right.
And, you know, they can't keep the government open. I mean, it's astounding. Their strategy for their own dysfunction seems to be first blame Obama for everything, and then second, when you can't blame Obama, blame the Democrats, even though they don't control anything in the government at this point.
Right. All right, I saved the best for last. You know what I want to know. Russia, Russia, Russia. we just played a soundbite. You know, you're talking about, obviously it was their job to vet Flynn, who the Obama administration has fired. I don't know about you. Most people ask a couple of questions about someone and why they've been fired from their last job, right? But
you would hope, especially for a position like National Security Advisor. But again, they're blaming Obama for the fact that this guy was a disaster, not only in the Obama administration, but obviously for the Trump administration.
Right.
There's no deflecting responsibility. They didn't vet a lot of their people. It's why a lot of their people have had troubles. A lot, bowed out before even the confirmation began. But the Flynn situation, you have to ask why they didn't do more work to explore why he was in Russia to begin with, whether he received any money for going there, why he, wrote pieces in the newspaper saying we should give Turkey back this cleric who lives in Pennsylvania that Erdogan wants to get his hands on. Well, he was getting paid $500,000 to write stuff like that.
Congressman, where are we at with this? You know, obviously there's flickers of life in the House investigation, which you are leading. Obviously, the Senate seemed to suffer the same thing with Burr that you did with Nunez it just seems so clear. When you have someone like Carl Bernstein saying the White House is clearly obstructing, he would know something a little bit about a White House obstructing justice. We so clearly need an independent investigation, right?
We do. I think on the positive side of things, you're right. We are back on track in the House Intelligence Committee. We have a new Republican lead. We're working together very well. But at the same time, we would really benefit from having a parallel course run by a fully independent commission that was well enough staffed and resourced to do the job, completely outside of any political environment or political context. That really is what we did after 9/11. It's what we ought to do here, not as a substitute for Congress doing an investigation also, but as a very important adjunct.
So I can't remember, is it Representative Swalwell? Am I saying that correctly? I mean, seems to be the second person after you to say publicly that he has seen more than circumstantial evidence of collusion. And it just seems like we are getting, as Malcolm Nance always says, that we are getting with the point of intelligence is turning into evidence now. So where would you say we're at right now?
Well, it's very hard because we're obviously confined in what we can say about any specifics in the investigation. But, you know, there's certainly good reason for us to be doing this investigation. There's good reason for the FBI to be doing their investigation. And, you know, I think the most that we can hope for, that the public can hope for, is that we do a thorough job, that we follow the evidence where it leads, that we try to reach a unified conclusion about what the facts show. It's really too early for us to prejudge where that conclusion will be. But, you know, I think we happily are in a better place in terms of the House investigation, where we're working together much better than we had after the whole White House incident with our chair. But, you know, what people, I think, have every right to expect is that we make our best efforts to get to the bottom of these allegations.
That's very gentlemanly of you to call it an incident. Can I just tell you, not only that you are my personal congressman and I've always been a huge fan, but I have to thank you for how, you know, just how hard you've been fighting for just truth, justice, and the American way. Can I call you Superman?
Well, you're very kind.
Well, no, but I
prefer when you call me the smooth jazz congressman.
Smooth jazz congressman from the great state of California. Yeah. yeah, but here's what I want to say is, I guess when they first had that first press conference with the Senate committee, and they're like, oh, see how much better this is than the House one. The House one's a mess, and look at how bipartisan this is. And oh, you know, and I thought, I'm sorry, Devin Nunes is a disgrace, and he made a disgrace of himself. And you were doing a fantastic job, and to get painted with, oh, both sides do it, and oh, it's a mess because of both sides, was so completely inaccurate. Right. And now we've seen Republicans do the same thing on the Senate side, obstructing and obstructing and obstructing. And, I, you know, but just thank you for your steady leadership in this.
Well, I appreciate it. You know, I think like you and like so many of your listeners, this presidency has been different in kind than any that we've experienced in our lifetime, where you have, the president of the United States viewing the free press as an enemy of the people, where you have them continue to call into question the legitimacy of a judge that rules against them, any judge that rules against them. And even the Attorney General is saying that he marvels the fact that some judge out on an island somewhere and, can be a check on the executive. Yeah, he's called a federal judge, and that's how the system works.
Yeah.
It's a little scary that has to be explained to the Attorney General and the President of the United States.
Well, I think what's, giving us all solace is, like I say, leaders like you in the resistance, that the resistance is working, that right now the courts are holding against all of these unconstitutional orders. So we do have some checks and balances in place. I think everybody feels like we're in a race against the clock with this Russia investigation before he starts a war to distract from this. I mean, that's what I feel like the point where we're at. Do you?
Yeah. Well, I do think along the lines of what you're saying that... the system is doing what it should, and that is putting some real guardrails up around a White House that has a lot of impulses that certainly look at odds with our Constitution. I do worry, about the president's unbridled ability to make war, It's one of the reasons why I've reintroduced an authorization that would repeal these bills that were passed after 9/11 that give pretty much carte blanche to the president. So that Congress once again reestablishes itself as a check on the president's war-making power.
Yep.
That's a problem, I have to say, though, in full fairness, that the Obama administration helped to create, because it took that very expansive interpretation of the old authorizations, and now we're stuck with it.
Right. But we didn't, in fairness, we didn't notice because he was sane. So
yes,
I'm just saying, it's particularly important now.
I do long for no drama Obama.
Congressman, thank you as always, and thanks for taking time for us. I know you're busy holding up the Republic with one hand, and we appreciate you using the other to dial us.
Well, and, call me anytime. I am your congressman. Let me know if you need me to come over and fix those potholes.
Yeah, well, there is still that pothole thing, and the speed bumps could use a little help. All right, thank you, Congressman. Appreciate
you.
It. All right.
Take care.
Yeah, just... See, I'm his speed bump on the way to saving America. It's like, all right, fine. Treason, whatever. Pothole down there. Let's go.
Oh, man.
He is my very personal congressman.
He is.
He's the congressman from right there.